Good morning and welcome to Our American Heritage. I am Art Chandra, the host of the program. Our American Heritage is a program where we explore in depth the American experience from the beginning to the present. And today we want to look at the Siege of Boston and why the Siege of Boston is so important for the American Revolution, and why was the siege in geographically the Boston area, and what caused this to really ignite the American Revolution. So we're coming up to the anniversary, which is in April, to the Siege of Boston and Lexington and Concord. And as we come up there, we have seemed to, over a long period of time, lost a lot of the background material of how did these 13 colonies, who were subjects to the crown and part of the English Empire, how did they ever get to the place where they decided they had enough of Great Britain and the protection of Great Britain and fought a war for their own independence? And it just didn't happen in a vacuum. Something just didn't erupt some one day in Boston with some of these Sons of Liberty that we now know them to be called, and have a war against Great Britain. There were several things that transpired long before this, at first, was a minor interruption in the Boston area, which then exploded out of the Boston area. It seeped down into the middle colonies, then eventually seeped down into the southern colonies. And while that process was going on, this localized rebellion then became a rebellion not only in all 13 colonies, but actually it ended up being a world war. The French declared war on the Brits, the Spanish declared war on the Brits, then the Dutch declared war on the Brits partway through the American Revolution. But as we look back, we all should always realize that nothing is done in a vacuum, and things just don't happen with some background material. So what we need to do to understand particularly Lexington and Concord, and then the Siege of Boston, we have to go back to the seeds of where all this started, and it really starts with the French and Indian War. And obviously, and again, primarily it due to control of land and resources and economy. Out in the Ohio River Valley, the French wanted to have control of the Ohio River Valley, and the British claimed that they controlled the Ohio River Valley. And so both countries are claiming that the Ohio River Valley is their property. And what happens is, as the French begin to move out of Canada down into New York and then down into the western part of Pennsylvania and the Ohio River Valley, they started to build forts along the way as trading forts and send military to control that area, primarily from attacks from Native Americans, and also to hold off the British as they were claiming that territory. So in the French and Indian War, it really comes down to who is going to control the Ohio River Valley and how are they going to control it. So the French believed that they could have the Native Americans help them to control the Ohio River Valley. The Brits believed that they could control the Ohio River Valley with militia. And so what happened was militia was sent out from Virginia under the guides of a young man named George Washington to go out to the western part of Pennsylvania in the Ohio River Valley and try to negotiate with the French of this is not their land, this is British land. Well, that didn't go well, not well at all. So George Washington returns to Virginia with his little militia to the Governor Dinwiddie, and it didn't go well. So eventually this begins to explode, where the British now have to send military over to protect the Ohio River Valley, to fight for the Ohio River Valley. And so it is virtually comes down to the French and Native Americans are now going to take on the British and some militia, particularly from Virginia. And there was also a discrepancy of state borders or colony borders. Who owned the Ohio River Valley? How far north could Virginia come and claim that is part of their territory? Where is the lines that protect Pennsylvania, southern part of Pennsylvania, western part of Pennsylvania to the Ohio River Valley? So as all these things began to unfold, this is what transpires to which we know is the French and Indian War. And this really, the French and Indian War explodes because young George Washington's next trip out to the Ohio River Valley with a message from the governor of Virginia that the French need to cease and move out of territory that's not theirs. And the French were out with a scouting party under Jumonville. And unfortunately, it turned into a terrible situation because Washington had a small group of men and some Native Americans with him. And it was in about a 15-minute firefight, and several of the French were wounded. A few of the French were killed. And Jumonville was actually there trying to tell Washington that we're not here to fight. We're out here to try to negotiate. And it got out of control. And what happened was that the Native Americans under Half King then killed all the French wounded and killed Jumonville. And so that transpired to Fort Necessity, which Necessity turned into a battle for Washington as militia, as the French and the Native Americans attacked Fort Necessity. Washington had to withdraw. He signed a document that he really didn't know what he was signing and shouldn't have signed it. And we see a young George Washington make several mistakes in his debut as a military leader. And that basically starts the French and Indian War, which takes 7 years. It goes back and forth. And for the majority of the French and Indian War, the French are winning. And one of the reasons the French are winning is because the French with Native Americans know how to and are using guerrilla tactics to fight out in the Ohio River Valley, where the British are using the old Western European style of fighting. And so what happens is the British need to totally change their tactic at this point. And one of the main characters or main players in the American Revolution is the British send over General Thomas Gage. And General Thomas Gage is out in the Ohio River Valley. And we first see him where he is sent to America with his regiment, and they are on the Braddock expedition out to the western part of Pennsylvania, and at the Battle of Monongahela, which is hard for me to say, this is where General Braddock is shot and killed, and this is where General Gage also then becomes friends with this young George Washington at this point. Thomas Gage knows that the tactics must be changed. They cannot fight a war with European style of fighting. He knows that. And he sees it again because he's in command of, he's second in command at Fort Oswego, which totally failed. And so what Thomas Gage does is thinks outside the box, and he creates this whole regiment called Light Infantry, and he trains them how to fight more of a guerrilla type of fighting. So you can take on the Native American, you can take on the French, and not fight in European style of fighting. And it's very successful. is very successful. And actually, what that does, it spurs on the British to win the French and Indian War. And that light infantry that Thomas Gage put together, today would be the equivalent for us today as possibly a small Marine Corps or the 10th Mountain Division or the Navy SEALs or the Rangers, some sort of special forces that can fight, attack, hold a line, and then wait for the larger military to come in. And it's Gage who invents this light infantry. And then when the French and Indian War is over, the British keep Thomas Gage here in the America, in the colonies. But what they do is they abandon his idea of light infantry because the British thought, we don't need it. We're not fighting guerrilla fight anymore. We're not out fighting Native Americans and the French any longer. So they immediately go back to that European style that they were trained and used to at this point. At the end of the French and Indian War, Thomas Gage then becomes the commander-in-chief of all the British forces in the Americas at this point. And Thomas Gage loved the colonies. He loved the colonies because of the land, because of the opportunity, because of the expanse of what he saw here. Thomas Gage loved the thinking of the colonists that they could be landowners and they could be self-sufficient. And there was just a tremendous opportunity that Thomas Gage saw here as a British general that he knew that could never take place in Great Britain. He marries a woman from New Jersey, Margaret Kimball. And after he marries Margaret Kimball, a colonist, they return to Great Britain. And then Thomas Gage is sent back here in 1774 to be the military governor of Massachusetts. Thomas Gage knows colonists. He knows our thinking. He knows our understanding. He understands the colonist viewpoint. And Thomas Gage was the right person to be the commanding officer of the British. And ultimately, then after Breed's Hill, he's relieved of command and he is sent back to Great Britain. And that is one of Great Britain's major mistakes in having to try to bring the fervor down in this localized fight against the British, the British or the Bostonian militias and the British. After Lexington and Concord, which is a whole other idea and another talk, Thomas Gage asked the Crown to send 20,000 more troops. The Crown is not happy with the Lexington and Concord. They have now been embarrassed on several locations, several situations. So what the Crown does is they send over 2,000 troops and three generals. And it was the idea of, the Crown's going to keep their eye on Thomas Gage to see exactly why things are not turning out the way they should. And so that leads us up to the siege of Boston. After Lexington and Concord, with these three generals, and it's William Howe, Henry Clinton, and John Burgoyne are sent to the Americas. This situation needs to be addressed. How it's going to be addressed, how they're going to take care of this, the British really don't know what to do. But what they do know is military force. So with the siege of Boston, then, you have these different players of William Howe, John Burgoyne, which was sent home, and then he came back a year later, and Henry Clinton under the command of Thomas Gage. But why the siege? Why this little city of Boston? Why not New York, Philadelphia, Baltimore? Why not somewhere else in the colonies? Well, number one, these fires, so to speak, are not lit in New York or Philadelphia or Virginia. They're in the Boston area. Two, because of the dynamics of this little city of Boston, it was much more conducive to have some sort of a situation there because it's a peninsula. So if you remember, what were some of the reasons that caused these colonists to be To be so angry now and come up with taxation without representation is tyranny. If you remember the Stamp Act, which greatly angered the colonists, the Tea Act, putting tax on tea that you had to buy from Great Britain, the Townshend Act, which began to take away military and judicial power from the colonists, which they called the Intolerable Acts, the Boston Massacre that happened, the Boston Tea Party, and then ultimately Lexington and Concord. So these are some of the things in the background where particularly these things happened mostly in the Boston area that really began to anger the colonists, which created the Sons of Liberty and with Samuel Adams fueling the flames of this fight. Well, the other generals, William Howe, which he goes on to become the military commander after Breed's Hill. He has one of three brothers that had a major military career. One of his brothers was killed during the French and Indian War. His other brother is an admiral, Admiral Richard Howe. And so William Howe goes on to lead the attack on Breed's Hill. And after that disaster, General Gage is relieved of command. General Howe then is elevated to be the commanding officer in the colonies all the way through May of 1778, which is right at the end of Valley Forge, or almost at the end of Valley Forge, where he resigns and goes back to Great Britain. And in May of 1778, if you remember, he almost captured the Marquis de Lafayette at this little battle, Baron Hill out in Lafayette Hills, which fortunately for all of us, he did not capture the Marquis de Lafayette. So William Howe goes on to be the commanding officer. Another general that was sent to the colonies was General Henry Clinton. General Henry Clinton's probably strong point was that he understood the importance of southern ports. He understood that the Brits needed to hold on to the southern ports and the colonies so they could continue to control the Caribbean and the trade in the Caribbean. In 1776, it's Henry Clinton that captures Charleston. And then later on, when General Howe retires and goes back to Great Britain, Clinton then is elevated to be the commanding officer of the British in the Americas. And we see his first confrontation at Monmouth County Courthouse, goes back into New York in the middle of the night, and he knows that the British need to hold the South. He understands that when he first takes Charleston in 1776, and then he takes the war and captures Savannah with General Lord Charles Cornwallis. Henry Clinton then goes back to New York, the whole New York City, in 1778, and then a lot of the war then is fought in the South for the rest of the war. After Yorktown, which is September, October of 81, Senator Guy Carleton takes over command from General Henry Clinton, and he becomes a commanding officer. The other one that we don't know much about because he is sent home is General John Burgoyne, which we know as Gentleman Johnny Burgoyne. He was a playwright. He was an author. He wrote words for operas. He was quite an eloquent man on many different levels because of his being able to write and being an author and writing lyrics for operas. He becomes known on one level as Gentleman Johnny, but he also is known as Gentleman Johnny because of how he respected his other officers and he respected his men. It is General Burgoyne later on that designs the strategy to cut New York into three different sections and hold the North. And it's also Burgoyne who has to surrender his army Battle of Saratoga, Freeman's Farm in Bemis Heights. He is not actually in the long run blamed for that because the military knew what was happening and where he was going and how that was so unsuccessful. So John Burgoyne does take an influence there. He surrenders his army at Saratoga. It's the first time that the British had surrendered an army in the history of the empire. So with that is Thomas Gage, William Hale, Henry Clinton, John Burgoyne. Four very significant influences in the Americas. On the other side of who were the colonial leaders, and the militia commander outside Boston is Artemus Ward. He was one of the leading generals of the militias outside of Boston. John Adams said that Artemus Ward was universally esteemed, universally beloved. He had total confidence in his militia and in his country. Artemus Ward. He was a general of the militia, of the Massachusetts militia during the French and Indian War. And when the British go back into Boston after Lexington and Concord, it is Artemus Ward who deploys the militia to start the siege of Boston, to try to surround Boston on three sides and then hold the British inside of Boston. His headquarters, firstly, was out in Cambridge. He also gave the orders to General Israel Putnam, and if you remember William Prescott, to fortify Bunker Hill. And then they decided, we're not only going to fortify Bunker Hill, but we're going to fortify Breed's Hill. Artemus Ward, when the British finally leave Boston in March of 76, it is Artemus Ward who leads the troops into Boston when the British finally they vacate Boston and they move to Halifax. Artemus Ward goes on to be a delegate in Congress. He served in the House of Representatives. There is a museum at Harvard named in his honor. The American University in Washington has Ward Circle that's named after him. There was a town named for him in Massachusetts, Ward, Massachusetts. Later on, it was renamed to Auburn, Massachusetts, because it was too close to another name. So Auburn was originally Ward, Massachusetts. And he was just a phenomenal. He's in bad health. And so eventually, not much long after, he retires because of his bad health. And we don't see much of Artemus Ward militarily from that point on because of his bad health. We all know one of the large players also in the siege of Boston ultimately is George Washington. And he becoming, through Congress, the commander of the Continental Army that ultimately gets up to the Boston area and sets up Dorchester Heights. Henry Knox ultimately becomes a major player in the American Revolution. He was a bookstore owner. He had a minor role in a local militia. He was losing a lot of money because the siege of Boston, people weren't buying, coming into his bookstore. He tried to teach himself how to shoot. And as one day he was practicing with a pistol, he made the mistake of shooting the pistol, and it took off his last two fingers on his left hand. Eventually, he works his way out to General Washington after he becomes commander-in-chief, and Washington puts Henry Knox in charge of the artillery through reading different books, and just a phenomenal story that Henry Knox has through the American Revolution, ultimately later on becomes the Secretary of War. At that point, we will continue our story. This is 1180 AM WFYL, working for your liberty.